නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Actually, we were discussing Mahasunyata Sutta, and that is available in the Majjhima Nikaya, and this is one of the great discourses given by the Buddha, explaining how one may cultivate voidness or the emptiness, and thereby one can eliminate various defilements. So if I just rush through what we already covered, so Buddha was living at Kapilavattu, Nigrodha's park, and at that time Buddha understood that there were so many what you call dwelling places were prepared for monks, and Buddha understood that there are so many monks get together, and Buddha inquired that from Venerable Ananda, and he replied that this is the rain robe season where monks are receiving many robes, and as a result they are preparing robes, and therefore many monks are working together. And Buddha didn't admire it, rather Buddha in a way condemned that, telling that if one is taking delight in company, who likes association, who likes company, then he may not have the ability to get into jhana, get into the other path fruition, because those are more relevant or more conducive with some seclusion. So therefore Buddha started to explain about the aspects of seclusion and how one may develop it, and particularly how to have not merely the bodily seclusion, how to have mental seclusion, chitta viveka, as well as the freedom from various defilements, what we call it as the upadhi viveka. Oh, actually there are three levels of seclusion we can recognize. First one is kaya viveka, where one having some kind of a seclusion, who is available, I mean who is simply going away from the other, say, people, and have some kind of a bodily seclusion. So that is also possible sometimes, and sometimes it is required. But most important seclusion is the other two, that is Chitta Viveka and the Upadhi Viveka. Chitta Viveka is where one can gain through Samatha practice by calming down defilements, calming down hindrances. And on the other hand, the Upadhi Viveka is what, which is more profound and again takes some time to uproot various defilements, so that mind becomes secluded properly, mind becomes secluded from various defilements. Otherwise, mind is always associated with various defilements. Now, at this occasion, Buddha is explaining about various kinds of development, and he particularly explained that he has found or he discovered the emptiness or sunyata, and that actually go in parallel with the signless concentration, that is the animitta. First actually Buddha talks about the animitta, and but the sutta is more focused on emptiness. You can remember, I think I have explained to you during the last discourses, where when one is more capable or more confident and one's understanding of impermanence is more profound, then one's mind get released through impermanence or through using impermanence. Actually, that is what we call as signless concentration, animitta, animitta cheto vimutti. And on the other hand, if one's understanding about the unsatisfactoriness, suffering, is more profound, then one may not desire grasping, one may not desire any phenomena, rather mind get released through this desireless concentration, or what we call as appanihita vimokkha. On the other hand, when one understands there is nothing substantial here, there is no essence, there is no core here, and again there is no self here, and things are happening as a cause and effect relationship, and there is no kind of a governability or control over here. So that is more the aspect of non-self. And if one one's understanding of non-self is more profound, is able to release through sunyata, or what we call as emptiness concentration. Now, Buddha explains, now this concentration as a mechanism to overcome various defilements. And first of all, he is explaining various ways that a monk or a devotee, a practitioner, how he may cultivate it. He may be able to recognize some kind of a temporary release of mind, but that is not enough. He needs to dwell in it. He needs to maximize it. As much as possible, he has to abide by that, has to dwell in that emptiness. So this is kind of a gradual practice. You can't immediately maintain such an empty mind or released mind immediately. So you need to slowly develop that. So first of all, one can develop a fair amount of concentration in order to have the necessary amount of, say, focused in your mind. Then only one can use what you say the vipassana techniques to properly analyze various phenomena, properly understand their characteristics. So some amount of concentration is required. So first, therefore, Buddha mentioned, how does he steady his mind internally, quiet it, bring it to singleness and concentrate it. So this collecting one's mind, concentrating it, making it together or focusing it is required. So there are, Buddha explains, using various jhanas that one is able to concentrate one's mind. And then he is explaining how he is developing voidness or emptiness internally. So there are many ways to develop emptiness internally. Suppose you are developing dhatu manasikara, the mindfulness on the various elements, their characteristics, how they are behaving. So this is what we call as element meditation, dhatu manasikara, and using which one can attain emptiness. Suppose you are developing anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. So if you are properly developing mindfulness on breathing, using that also one can attain emptiness. Suppose you are developing various postures, rising and falling. So using which also you can attain emptiness. Now all these are internal phenomena. Suppose you are observing various feelings, how they are behaving, how they are arising and passing away. So this also helps to attain emptiness. And assume that you are recognizing various mind states, how thoughts are arising and passing away. So that is the Chittanupassana side, using which also one can attain emptiness. So likewise, different internal, say, techniques are available using which you can attain emptiness. But here Buddha beautifully explains that one tries to it to implement or attain that emptiness, but he failed. So he tries to attain emptiness externally, sometimes he fails. He may use both aspects, internally as well as externally, but still he fails. Sometimes he wants to attain imperturbability, so that is typically referred to arupa jhana, that also expands one's mind. And that also can be recognized as a kind of a result of samatha practice or as a result of vipassana practice. One can attain this arupa jhana using vipassana practice as well. So when one develops emptiness, say signlessness or desirelessness, that can be expanded to this imperturbability, or what we call as cheto vimutti, the freedom of mind. And that may rely, or that may very much, very similar to the arupa jhana. So that is actually well explained in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. Probably we can take that sutta also later. And one tries to attain that, and sometimes he fails. So Buddha explained that very beautifully here. So it's a kind of a practical approach. So if he fails, what he has to do? Then further, he has to refine his mind. Probably the concentration may not be enough. So he has to go back to making his mind further concentrated. He has to make the mind one-pointed. Then after that is fairly all right. It's like sharpening your mindfulness, sharpening your concentration. And after that is enough. Now you are again trying. Now you are again trying to attain emptiness using internal phenomena, internal techniques. Trying to attain emptiness using external phenomena, or using both. Or you are trying immediately to attain imperturbability. Now Buddha says, if the typical or if the necessary requirements are satisfied, then you may be able to attain emptiness. Now when he is able to do so, then he is gaining, acquires confidence, steadiness and decision, and he is aware of that. Anenjang ko me manasikaroto anenjaya cittang pakkhandati pasidati santittati vimuchyati itiha tatta sampajano hoti. Now this statement is common to each and every state. Assume that you are using various internal phenomena, internal methods, and then you are able to attain voidness, emptiness. Then you are well established there. Now you have to properly establish there. It may not be immediately happen. I mean, even that has to be developed. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 45 minutes. So likewise, you are expanding that time. Now slowly you gain confidence. You gain steadiness. Previously there may be time to time certain interference. Again, mind goes and grasps something. Such interference might happen. But as you continue, steadiness may develop. Clarity may further confirmed. And he is fully aware of it. It is not something that you are not aware. It is not kind of a dream world. It is not something kind of an unconscious situation. You are fully conscious. You are fully aware of it. But sometimes what happens is, due to the imbalance of certain, say, enlightenment factors, so probably you are not much conscious at the beginning. Suppose that your concentration is very high. On such situation, probably the consciousness, or what we call here as mindfulness, awareness, might not be strong enough to know what is really happening. Then you need to balance those faculties. You need to little reduce concentration. You need to allow emptiness to break and see how you can gain mindfulness, how you can improve mindfulness, what are the certain hindrances for that. So likewise, you are now adjusting your situation so that you become conscious, so that you become aware of the situation. It is not kind of an unconscious situation, rather you have to have a conscious situation. You have to be fully aware of the situation. And then Buddha mentioned that he wants to walk, he wants to stand, he wants to sit, or he wants to lie down. So now different postures. Now he is maintaining different postures, and during that time also he wants to maintain emptiness. And he has a wish, may my mind not beset by evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief. So he has a kind of a resolution that he wants to maintain a very pure mind, clean mind, purified mind. And so he is using these various postures, familiarizing with these postures, and even in all those possible postures, he is trying to maintain a very clean, clear, purified mind. Now he is thinking of talking with someone. Now he is not talking the subjects which is polluting the mind, but only he selects the subjects which are useful to one's development. So we discussed those topics last time. And then he want to think sometimes. In his mind, inclines to thinking. Sometimes he want to think something. Now when thinking, he is a bit careful. He is not allowing the mind to think various unnecessary harmful things. Rather, he wants to protect his mind even when the mind is involved in thinking. So we have heard that there are three kinds of thoughts: sensual desire related thoughts, ill will, harmful thoughts. So those are harmful not only to others, it is harmful to oneself. So those kinds of thoughts, therefore Buddha mentioned that those are harmful. So when thinking, one is little careful whether such thinking is going on. If so, he has to avoid it. He has to prevent it. He has to slowly eliminate that. But maybe the other side, that the thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of harmlessness, so those are all right. If he want to really think, he may think in line of that. And then Buddha explained that about five chords of sensual desires that one's mind get attracted to. Those are beautiful forms, beautiful sounds, smells, tastes, and touching sensations, tactile sensations. Now, time to time, this yogi is reflecting whether my mind get excited concerning any kind of these sensual bases. Say, for example, you are trying to keep a mind very calm, quiet, peaceful, but time to time, mind go and latch with some sort of, say, beautiful song, for example. Mind is again and again reminding it, repeating it, trying to delight with it. Now you understand, okay, this fellow has this kind of a behavior. Even though I want to maintain a very pure mind, but this fellow still doesn't care about that. He time to time got involved in singing, maybe. And on the other hand, assume that you have seen something beautiful, maybe a beautiful girl, beautiful boy, whatever it is, or maybe a beautiful scenery. So mind reminds that, mind remembers that. So when there is nothing much to do, so mind gets involved in that sort of thinking, remembering the face or whatever it is. And so mind again get excited, mind again get little agitated, mind again get occupied. Now, this he properly understand how this mind is behaving. It's very much like a mother looking after her child. So, when you are a mother, so you know how your child is behaving. And what are his desires? What are his intentions? What is his behavior? So, through observation, mother understand how her child is behaving. So, similarly, when you have a fair amount of mindfulness, you know to which direction mind is inclined towards. And then Buddha further explains that a very profound part, and that is actually related to the what you call as five aggregates. And actually the previous part, when he understand, clearly know that sometimes mind get involved with some beautiful songs, sounds, sometimes engage with, say, beautiful sceneries, images, beautiful forms, or sometimes with pleasant odors, sometimes with, say, delicious tastes. Or sometimes with whatever the good tactile sensations. Now this is not really at that particular very moment experience, but sort of reminding what you already had or what you imagined. So imaginary things also may include. Sankappa rago purisassa kama. So you are having some sort of mind-made situations, fabrications, daydreaming. So you understand, okay, still mind likes it. Mind likes to involve there. Mind get excited because of that. So this excitement, agitation, the inclination available in the mind is well recognized. So therefore one humbly understand, even though I am practicing hard, still mind is not fully free from these desires, fully free from what you call karma sava. That is the desire or the taint of various sensual pleasures, so it is still available. So one has to humbly understand that, honestly understand that. And then Buddha explained the reflection about five aggregates. So you know there are five aggregates Buddha, in according to Buddha's teaching: form aggregate, rupakkhanda, then feeling aggregate, Vedana khanda, perceptions aggregate, sanya khanda. Fabrications or formations aggregate, that is the sankhara khanda. And then vijnana khanda, that is the consciousness aggregate. Now, all our experience can be properly analyzed using these five aggregates. And these aggregates are not actually remain as it is, rather they are subjected to clinging. We time to time go and grasp. Our mind get attached to one of these or many of these. So therefore, understanding each aggregate is quite important. So what is form aggregate? Now, if we consider in simple terms, so whatever we see comes under form aggregate. Whatever we hear comes under form aggregate. Whatever we smell comes under form aggregate. Whatever we experience through our tongue, taste, comes under form aggregate. Whatever we experience through our body, sensations, particularly the what you call element characteristics, that comes under form aggregate. So basically what happened is, so as we continue our practice, so slowly the understanding about these aggregates become more prominent and more important and more clear to us. At the beginning, we sometimes not understand why what Buddha is explaining through about these aggregates. But later, we as our mind clarity improves, as our understanding deepens, we are able to understand, yes, what is this form aggregate? So internally, we have our body and the various bodily parts. All these we can say comes under the form aggregate. And more refined level, that can be analyzed as four elements, element characteristics. So all that comes under the form aggregate. And we are experiencing certain feelings, pleasurable feelings, neutral feelings, painful feelings. So all that comes under the feeling aggregate. And Buddha actually expands this. I mean, at the moment, that is a momentary experience plus what we had in the past, what we are going to have in the future, and it may be internal, external, it may be far, near, subtle and gross. So various different possibilities, Buddha analyze and explain all that comes under each and every aggregate. If any phenomena, if any physical phenomena happened in the past, and we go and grasp it, then it also comes under the form aggregate. So if there are some phenomena, bodily phenomena, we are thinking about it and we are grasping that, then some relationship is there to the form aggregate. So likewise, so this division or explanation about aggregates is so vast in a way, so there is nothing excluded. We can say what is excluded is only the supramundane states. Nibbana and that supramundane states are not coming under the aggregates. Aggregates covers each and every condition phenomena. Whatever we can think of as if they are conditioned, then they are comes under a category of one category of an aggregate. And when it comes to our mental side, the feelings, pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings, so there are bodily feelings as well as the mental feelings. Say you feel happy, you feel sorrowful. So that is also included under the feeling aggregate, Vedana Khanda. And not only that, we have various perceptions. He is good, he is bad. And so he is a nice person. He is a beautiful person. So likewise, we have some sort of perception about a person or even about something. It's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. So likewise, we have certain perceptions. So that is actually based on certain characteristics that we pick from each and every phenomena using a person or inanimate thing. So we are using certain marks, signs, in order to remember that, in order to measure that, in order to precisely recognize that.
So this recognition is going through these perceptions. So the perceptions aggregate is so vast, and there are certain signs that we are using to recognize various forms, sights. So therefore, the sanya khand, the perception aggregates, operates in the level of the forms as well, rupa sanya. Different kinds of perceptions are there with respect to various forms, and different kinds of perceptions are there with respect to sounds. You can recognize say animal sounds, you can distinctly recognize it is a dog, it is a cat. So different sound characteristics are there, and female sound characteristics and male sound characteristics are different. So you can recognize when a man is talking, you can recognize he is a man. When a woman is talking, you can recognize she is a woman. So these distinct characteristics all comes under the perceptions aggregate. And then various smells, such different distinct characteristics are there. And taste, different tastes are there. Various tactile sensations, different characteristics are there. And even when it comes to the mind, say when you feel lust, it has a different taste. When you feel anger, it has a different taste. You can recognize. Those all comes under perceptions aggregate. And then if we consider the formations aggregate, say different formations. So we construct. Say you recognize some sort of hardness, but you can't keep hardness as it is. That is a more preliminary stage. What you do is you are attributing it to a person, attributing it to a thing, and you are calling it is hard. The chair is hard. The table is hard. So you are attributing it a name. And say, then you are bringing some other previous experiences. This is a good table, this is a good chair, this is in this brand, and I bought that on last month. So likewise, all different constructions, weaving of thoughts, additions, multiplications, all these you do some sort of a formation, some sort of a fabrication inside the mind. So whenever we go through some experience, we are not experiencing it as its pure state, as its raw state. Rather, we do a lot of additions to it. We do a lot of multiplications to it, a lot of fabrications to it. We prepare it. We construct it. Then we experience. And while experiencing also, we do those, we continue that constructions. We do more fabrications internally. So then we can understand it is not really a kind of an objective experience that we go through. Rather, we are going through always a subjective experience. So therefore, all our experiences are sort of colored, subjective. So we both assume that there are two people and they both are experiencing the same phenomena. Say there's a tree and they both look at the tree. But for one person, that tree may be useful and he may want to buy it or he may want to own it. Immediately he wants to cut it and do something. So that is now he is constructing. But to another person, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want to keep it. He wants to conservate it. He wants to protect the tree. So this is, now you can understand, I mean, even though the object is the same, but the two persons experiencing it are quite different. One may want to cut it, sell it and earn some money, but another person wants to protect it, save it and say save the environment. The same object. So therefore, every time when we are going through certain experience, so depending on our various preconceived ideas, our upbringing, our likes and dislikes, various our latent tendencies, so due to various reasons, we do a lot of fabrications, we do a lot of constructions, preparations, and then we are going through all these further experiences. you are doing a lot of multiplications, additions, and all these fabrications, additions, multiplications, constructions, fabrications, whatever the name that we give, that all comes under the fabrications aggregate or the formations aggregate, sankhara khanda. And we do it in a wholesome way or we do it in an unwholesome way. So therefore, the fabrications are available in the wholesome side, fabrications are available in the unwholesome side. And when it comes to the consciousness, so as conscious beings, so when we see something, we can know. When we hear something, we can know. When we smell something, we can know. When we taste something, we can know. We are aware of it. When we are experiencing certain tactile sensations, we know about it. We are aware of it. And when mind has some kind of a mental object, we are conscious about it. So this consciousness, being aware of something, comes under the consciousness aggregate. So in roughly therefore, there are six categories of consciousness. The what you call as the I consciousness, which happens because when I and a form comes together. And then the ear consciousness, which happens when ear and sounds come together. Then nose consciousness, which happens when nose and a smell comes together. Then tongue consciousness, it happens when tongue and the taste comes together. Then the body consciousness, which happens when body and tactile sensation comes together. And then the mind consciousness, when mind and mind object comes together. So likewise, this whole knowing part, cognizing part, is considered under the consciousness aggregate. Now, when it comes to this understanding, you can use that to understand to which aggregate now mind is attached to. To which aggregate now mind is grasping. So therefore, they become grasping aggregates. So if they are merely aggregates, there is no big issue. But the issue happens when mind goes and grasps any of these aggregates. So you see a form, beautiful song, beautiful form, and mind go and immediately inclines to it, go and attach to it, go and grasp it, go and clinging to it. So then attachment is there, involvement is there, kind of an inclination towards that aggregate is there. Mind go closer to that form. Mind hanging around that form. Mind is grasping that form. Mind go inside that form. So likewise, different levels we can understand. Either go around it, either you go closer to it, either you attach to it, either you cling into it, go completely inside to it. So different levels of grasping also we can recognize. Now, if you are able to recognize this grasping, and if you are able to detach from that without promoting it, without being deluded by that, without improving attachment, if you are able to step back and look at it, look at the grasping, then this grasping start to fade away. Actually, even before that, if you are able to observe a particular aggregate consciously, with a very neutral mind, without grasping, probably you can understand how quickly these individual aggregates are rising and passing away. So that is what, say for example, in the Kayanupassana level, if you are doing Dhatu Manasikara, observing say bodily phenomena, so probably you may understand this hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, then cold, heat, movement. So these different characteristics are quickly arising and passing away. So that indicates the impermanent nature of the form aggregate. So if you are observing various feelings, How they quickly arise and pass away, it may be pleasurable feeling, painful feeling, equanimous feeling. Then you are observing the feeling aggregate. How quickly it is arising and passing away, how impermanent it is. If you are observing various perceptions, various signs, marks operating in the mind, how quickly they come and go, then you are operating on the feeling, the perceptions aggregate. Similarly, if you are able to understand various, say, formations, it may be loving kindness, it may be anger, it may be lust, it may be jealousy. But if you are able to step back and look at them, then you are understanding how quickly these different formations also arise and pass away. If you are able to keep your attention on various sense bases, say you are keeping your attention on eye, then you understand this seeing part quickly arise and pass away. It is not that you have a one continuum of seeing, rather you have a very instantaneous seeing, and then another instantaneous seeing, another instantaneous seeing. So altogether, it appear like a kind of continuum. So more one has precise mindfulness, more one has very precise resolution or clear comprehension, so this very quick seeing can be recognized, very quick hearing can be recognized, very quick smelling or tasting, touching or knowing, cognizing can be recognized. So there are also the consciousness, the operation of the consciousness aggregate can be understood, how quickly it is arising and passing away. Now Buddha mentioned here, if one is able to recognize how quickly these aggregates arise and pass away, then there is no possibility of making a person out of that. The conceit I am cannot happen, because you understand the aggregates impermanence, how quickly it arise and pass away, then you can't go and grasp it. Because the very aggregate that you are trying to grasp quickly disintegrate. So there can't be a soul there then. There can't be an ongoing entity there. There can't be an ongoing self there. So the I-making, mind-making, conceit, I am, all these different kinds of I-related things, mind-related things, myself-related things cannot operate in such situation. So very precise knowing of these aggregates and their observation, knowing their impermanent nature, therefore avoids grasping them. And even if mind unknowingly grasps that, if we properly analyze how they quickly arise and pass away, then the grasping may reduce and ultimately mind gets freed. So therefore, Buddha mentioned in this section that how one may use one's understanding about aggregates to recognize the grasping, and so that one may remove grasping and then avoid I-making, mind-making and myself. So the conceit I am, so this is called the Asmimana in Pali. So the conceit I am, based on these five aggregates, when we do some sort of clinging, now is abandoned. So aggregates are there and we think that they are permanent, they are beautiful, they are desirable, they are satisfiable, they produce some happiness. So because of that wrong understanding, we go and grasp. But on the other hand, when we understand their impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-governability, non-self, then the grasping reduces, grasping avoids, and therefore the I-making, mind-making, myself, so those kinds of I-centered thinking may start to reduce. Aggregates may be available, but the grasping is not available now, because you have seen very clearly the operation of the aggregates. They are very true nature of the aggregates. So when the understanding is there, grasping is not possible. Instead of passion, the dispassion arises. So the mind go and grasp because it doesn't know. It doesn't really understand the real nature of the aggregates. But when the knowledge is available, when the wisdom is available, it doesn't promote grasping, it doesn't promote attachment, because it very, very well know, very, very clearly know, there's no point of grasping, no point of clinging, no point of going and attaching. There is no some sort of a continuous entity here. Rather, it's a very momentary experience. So this is what actually, in a way, we can say, when you do a practice of mindfulness really happens, deepens your understanding about these, understanding about five aggregates. When you do Kayanupassana, the understanding about the form aggregate develops. When you do Vedanaanupassana, the understanding about the feeling aggregates developed. When you do Chittanupassana, understanding about the consciousness aggregate, then the, say, perceptions aggregate, fabrications aggregate further develops. And when you do Dhammanupassana, understanding about all five aggregates properly developed. So actually the four Satipatthana, we can therefore say we are getting some deeper understanding about five aggregates. More and more you have better understanding, now you are not allowing the mind to make an I using form aggregate. You are not allowing the mind to make a self using feeling aggregate. You are not allowing making I using perceptions aggregate. You are not allowing or promoting making a self out of fabrications aggregate. And you are not promoting making a self, a person, I using consciousness aggregate. So the I making, mind making, ahankara, mamankara, so these are slowly reduced. So previously, for example, if you did some good work, say later you can remember that. You remember, okay, I am the one who did it. I did the best. I become the first. And they all praised me. So the occasion is over, but now after a couple of months or even after a couple of years, still eye making happens. Still mind making happens, because you are delighted by thinking about it. So you are making a self out of some past experience. So if you properly understand these thoughts, how it is trying to make a self out of that past experience, then you can avoid that. Rather than promoting it, rather than delighted with it, you can simply understand how tactfully mind is trying to make a self, make a person, make an individual. Then try to slowly eliminate that. So likewise, one can maintain one's mind in a very pure state without making a self, without making I, without making mine. So full awareness is there. But no excitement, no grasping, no burden. So this Buddha explained, therefore, these states are entirely wholesome and have a wholesome outcome. They are noble, supramundane and inaccessible to the evil one. Now actually, Buddha explains that all these different kind of practices, that what we discussed today, so one steadies mind using some of the practices, concentration developed, and then using that one's trying various internal phenomena to attain emptiness, using external phenomena to attain emptiness, both using one trying to attain emptiness, and one immediately trying to attain imperturbability. One is talking and using the proper talking. One is walking, sitting, standing, lying down, they are also maintaining emptiness, not allowing the mind to get impure. And what else? Whenever one is thinking, one is trying only to think on the proper line. And again, last one that we, not the last one, again he trying to reflect whether his mind is latching on with various sensual desires, which may be form, sight, sounds, etc. If so, he understands that yes, still mind entertained those kinds of things. Now he is trying to slowly remove that. And the last one, what we discussed today, that is the understanding about five aggregates and knowing when the mind is grasping that. And so that one is avoiding that. So all these practices, Buddha say, Imeko ananda dhamma ekanta kusala, kusalayatika, ariya, lokuttara, anavakkanta papimata. Now these all different practices and their results are entirely wholesome and have a wholesome outcome. They are noble, supramundane, and inaccessible to the evil one. So whenever we attach to forms, sounds, etc., so they are accessible to the evil one, to the Mara. But on the other hand, if we do the opposite, if we are not attaching to them, if we are releasing them, if we are relinquishing them, keeping the mind more pure, empty, without grasping, then it is entirely wholesome. It is going towards the noble, supramundane levels. So I think we have enough today. Still, there are some more to discuss, and I probably can cover that later. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. And now I like to open the session for questions.
So if we have any new friends joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them via the chat. I'd like to invite Upendra for the first question.
Yep.
Is Bhante, I just want to share my experience with you. When I was doing walking meditation around 2 days back, I was actually observing a sight for last 2-3 months now. When I start my walking meditation, then I kind of will establish my concentration on that, and then I feel the left, right, likewise, and what is happening underneath my feet. Then there's a lot of comprehension going on with Arka.
Right.
And then after that, in hidden inside, I feel that that concentration is still going on, but I feel that doubt inside me whether I'm actually concentrating or not. It's like a cycle. Then it happens, and then I understand it again. Mind comes properly and very clearly to my walking meditation. So likewise, this was happening, and then I was trying to concentrate this very seriously last 2 days back. Then I felt like that I am going into very like a deep well or something like that. And then I was trying to observe myself from outside. Then I feel like now I was walking like a wind robot, like a wind sort of a toy. I'm just walking. And then inside it, now my head is kind of so empty, like a deep ocean. And then suddenly, like a question comes: why not asking questions? Likewise, that it comes like a bubble out of my head part, but I just feel it, see it from outside. Then there's this, I feel this sort of an empty feeling. And when I was doing this walking meditation, then mindful walking, and then during that time, I feel like my head is completely open to the universe. There's no attachment, nothing, like it's completely open. And there's particles just going up from my head side, and I'm just walking like a robot, like a wind robot.
Correct.
Like a wind toy. So, I just wanted to observe, I went into that inside my, on top of my head, and through that I can again see the walking meditation likewise. So likewise, then that again I observe that cycle is coming, that doubtness, but now I feel like my meditation is automatically happening, walking
correct.
Meditation.
Correct.
Then after that I came home and I just wanted to do some steaming, and then I was doing steaming, I feel that heatness hitting my face likewise, and heat just going around, and it's just going inside. And when I was doing it, I automatically felt my breathing meditation. After about 2-3 breaths, I felt like again that emptiness.
Correct.
That massive emptiness.
Correct.
And then I wanted to observe myself when I was steaming outside my body. Now, body is kind of bent towards that ball. And then that heat is hitting me, and meanwhile, breathing is going on. And inside it, my upper body part again opened up. Like so much emptiness.
Correct.
It's kind of completely open to the universe. Like.
Correct.
Then later, I just felt like I am in a kind of a. Kind of a deep empty situation where there are some kind of little particles going here and there, and then inside it also so much emptiness. Likewise, then next day morning when I just wanted to wake up and just sat on the bed and I just want to do some breathing meditation, anapanasati, so when I started doing it also, now I feel like breathing is going on. It started from right nostril, and it just only happening in the right nostril, long breath, short breath, likewise, and it's breaking into small particles, likewise, and body is again bending down. So again, I wanted to straighten my upper body, and in a straight posture, again I started. So meanwhile, also I feel that pain is going here and there, meanwhile breathing is going on. Again, that cycle comes. That questioning, and then so much vitarka going on, then doubting whether I am concentrating properly. It's like cycle. Then I again try to be more mindful. Again, that body, I feel the breathing going on, and body is again bending. So then the my breathing, it changed from left to right nostril. From right to left nostril. And again, that again, I wanted to straighten the body. Likewise, this was happening for about 5-6 times. Then around fourth, fifth time, I feel that again that deep emptiness comes in me.
Yeah.
Like empty particles, likewise, just going here and there, likewise.
Yeah.
Then, like in a deep sort of a ocean-like sort of a thing, which kind of feels kind of relaxing. And likewise, it just happened, Bhante. So
yeah, just allow it to happen. Actually, you have to allow it to happen. So actually, we are changing from the focused attention to full awareness, we can say like that. Say, previously, what we do is we are focusing our attention to individual phenomena. Say, you are experiencing hardness, softness, etc., or you are experiencing individual different feelings, or you are observing different distinct thoughts. Now here we have is what we have is momentary concentration. We have very narrow concentration, and we are being absorbed to each and every phenomena. But later, because of understanding, the mind lets go everything, and then mind become expanded. Mind become fully open. We are very much like in the space. So mind has no boundary. It is becoming kind of boundless. So this is what we call as freedom of mind, Cheto Vimutti. So far, mind was grasping something, holding something, narrowing down. So very, very narrow-minded situation what we had. But now only, mind has its full capacity. It is kind of a universal. I mean, it is not limited to a particular object. It is not limited to this body. But mind has complete openness, which is no boundary, it is boundless, and it is spreaded all around the world, all around the universe. So this is where the opening happens. So allow it to happen again and again. Now it can happen through samatha meditation, it can happen through vipassana meditation, and as per your experience, it has happened through vipassana meditation. It is good. So allow it to happen. So this is how the minds get open, what we discussed today. Say, if you know properly more and more about the impermanent behavior, mind gets opened through impermanence understanding, or what we call as signless. So you can't catch the signs, you can't recognize the signs, so the mind gets opened. On the other hand, say, you understand the desireless nature. I mean, no point of desiring. Everything is unsatisfactory. Everything is oppressed by, say, this impermanent situation. So there is no point of grasping it. So you have this kind of an understanding. Therefore, it is letting go. Again, mind gets opened. Whatever the
restrictions are no more, mind becomes open. So this is what we call appanihita vimokka. On the other part is where what we discuss even today, the emptiness. So you understand, okay, I mean, this is so vulnerable, very quick, very impermanent. So how can there be a person here? How can there be a soul here, a self here? So the emptiness is now more developed. So the mind gets open because you understand there is nothing substantial here. There is no person here. There is no core here. There is no essence here. As a result of that, mind lets go of everything and become open. So all these three possibilities are useful, and you can recognize precisely which way the mind gets open. I mean, no problem. But the most important thing is, don't doubt about it. So don't introduce defilements onto the process. Allow the minds to develop wisdom, and when that wisdom matures, at a given moment, mind gets open, mind gets released. Mind simply lets go this very narrow kind of mind state. Rather, it kind of blossoms. It rather opens. It is now open to the whole universe. So when it happens, just enjoy it. Just be there. Allow the mind to experience that openness. Just so, say, vivid experience, so wonderful experience. Because this far, our minds are so limited, completely narrow-minded, completely restricted. But now only it has found its open behavior, its spreaded situation, its complete full awareness. So mind has this capacity. Now it is trying to reach that capacity. And once it reaches there, just stay there. Don't entertain any doubts. Don't disturb it. Just enjoy it. Yeah.
Do you still have a question? Your hand is still raised.
Yes, of course. One thing now, there's another point now. When we come to day-to-day life, sometimes I feel hard to, we are to concentrate.
Nothing. No, definitely. I mean, you can't concentrate. There is nothing to concentrate. Just be in the emptiness. So, in the emptiness. So, I mean, when we are talking the term emptiness, so that indicates there is nothing there, no?
Yes.
So if you are again trying to find out breath, then you are again narrowing down your mind. If you are again trying to find out feelings, then you are again narrowing down your mind. So don't try to use any what you call mula kamatahana, or what is the primary object, or breath, or feeling, or thought, or whatever it is. If your mind is fully open, completely give up, completely now sort of universal, just be. Don't have any object there. Not necessary.
Okay.
Not necessary.
Right, Bhante.
Yeah.
And also, Bhante, now, just a bit of extra advice.
Yeah.
Now, actually, right now, I am having a kind of my lower disc is kind of, lumbar spine is kind of dislocated, so I am doctor advised me to bed rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, can we use it as a kind of a rapid healing process as well, mindfulness as a power?
I feel so, because now the thing is, now when our minds are completely worrying and depressed and always worrying about what is going on, actually it is harmful to the healing process. But on the other hand, when even though body is going through some suffering, but if the mind is quite relaxed and quite open and enjoying and in full positive, then you are not suffering. And body is going through some pain that is there. So that is what doctor is taking care of. But you are fully aware of the situation, but you are not really suffering. So the mindfulness can therefore really helpful as a healing process. So that is why, I mean, mindfulness-based stress reduction. So that is now this 21st or 20th century, I mean, that's what John Kabat-Zinn has come out with. So how to use mindfulness as a mechanism to reduce stress. So when you have this kind of awareness, when you are able to experience this kind of openness in the mind, definitely it is really helpful to overcome whatever the stress, whatever the bodily even discomfort, and so that you have a very pleasant abiding. Even though body is going through some pain, you are not suffering.
Hey my birthday.
Yeah.
So much grateful to you for your guidance,
yeah,
and also for the organizers. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell you on Sunday.
Thank you. I'd like to invite you to Devi for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, just a few queries. Now, we went through this voidness internally and externally. Now, internally, we are very much aware, but externally means external people or external sounds. Or what does the Buddha mean when he talks of externally, Bhante?
No, actually, when we consider externally, so that means, say, for example, there are certain sounds happen.
Yes.
So rather than observing internal phenomena, you can observe that external sound also to understand its impermanent behavior. So it's a kind of ongoing, repetitive sound. And you can, without getting disturbed by it, you can observe how it is really happening. So then you understand the impermanent nature of that sound. It can be used to develop wisdom. So
is it only sounds then that we are looking at? Because when we did the four foundations of mindfulness, the Buddha spoke about achatta bahitya, internal and external, and then the external was other forms, Bhante. So here we are not talking about that. We are only talking about sounds, right?
No, not only sounds. I am just giving an example as sound, but
okay,
the what Buddha explained as internal external applies here as well. So when we are in the Kayanupassana, so whatever forms, sounds, smell, taste, you can't have external taste, by the way. So I mean, whatever external we can consider as a mechanism to improve wisdom. And actually, this internal external, this distinction is explained in different ways. Now, say for example, at the moment, if you are experiencing prominently about a particular pleasurable feeling, say then we can consider it as a internal phenomena. But whatever the outside, whatever say now, that is only your focused phenomena, no? But there may be so many other feelings available. So that all can be considered as external phenomena. So this is one explanation. But on the other hand, the other explanation is that all internal feelings attributed to yourself can be considered as internal phenomena. But all the feelings attributed or experienced by the other people, other persons, can be experienced, can be explained as external phenomena. Now it is kind of an inferential knowledge. Now you understand how your feelings are behaving and how impermanent they are. So you have some understanding about them by your own experiential knowledge. That experiential knowledge you can use in order to understand how others are feeling, how others may go through something. So that is using inferential knowledge, you get some understanding. So that is also covered. So that is also, I mean, included in this external phenomena. When we call it as the internal external, so this definition is also included.
But for lay people like us, yes, I think internal is easier now, Bhante, because we feel that better.
No, actually, for everyone, what we first need to do is the internal. Because without proper understanding about internal phenomena, so I mean, you can't develop inferential knowledge, because in order to have some inferential knowledge, first of all, we need to have some hands-on experience. We need to have some concrete knowledge using which we are kind of developing certain inference.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then you also spoke about three types of viveka, the kaya and the citta. I understood, but can you just expand a little bit about the Upadhi Viveka?
Yeah, so actually that Upadhi Viveka is what fully based on this, what you call the Mahasunyata Sutta.
Uh-huh.
How to have that Upadhi Viveka? Because our minds are constantly being polluted because of various
Oh.
defilements, getting defiled because of defilements, because of these different, say, raga dosa moha. So this emptiness is something that we are trying to use as a kind of a reference, as a mechanism to have that purity in the mind. So that purity is nothing but the upadiviveka, the freedom of various defilements, freedom of various defilements. So actually, we can refer it more precisely to what we explained today. Actually, the upadhi is more something that I use to make a self. Suppose you have a good education, say you are a degree holder, you are having this kind of PhD, blah blah blah. So then it is an asset for you. It is something that you admire, that you like to tell about yourself. That is what you are putting to your CV. That is how you are explaining yourself, introducing yourself to another person. So that is an asset for you. So this asset helps to make a self.
Yes.
Now the upadhi viveka helps to understand this, and now you relinquish this asset. You are not holding, or you are not using that asset in order to make a self. So this upadhi viveka comes more deeply. So actually you can't do that immediately. So you need to understand this very tricky nature of the mind, how mind is using these different skills, these different experiences, these different say names, our status, social status, say titles, our traditions, our nation, national thing, values, religions, whatever the things, are all used to make a self. So the upadhi viveka helps. Upadhi viveka indicates that we are all not using any of these to make a self. So actually, the mechanism to do that is how you are analyzing the aggregates. So when we are using form aggregate, when it is grasping a form aggregate, when mind go and grasp form aggregate, so we are not allowing that situation to make a self. When mind go and grasp some sort of a feeling, we are not allowing making a self. When mind go and grasp some sort of a perception, title, degree, name, whatever it is, we are not allowing to make a self. So likewise, so the grasping, I mean, you can't have a self without grasping.
Yes.
So if we are able to catch grasping, then we are able to avoid eye making. We are able to avoid mind making. In order to have I, in order to have self, it is a must to have grasping. So if we are able to eliminate grasping, then we are free from eye making and mind making.
Those momentarily we might lose that sense of self momentarily even in deep meditation, but of course living in the external world you have to come back to your self, obviously, but I think
even in the mundane kind of situation, if your mind is completely in a very relaxed state, it is not a must to grasp.
No.
That's the point. Now, we may profoundly have some understanding in our meditation, but we may experience more relaxed, non-grasping state out of the meditation, because sometimes meditation is more artificial like. But when you are more relaxed and your mind is in a kind of a very good balance, so immediately mind may release everything and may come to what we previously discussed with the Upendra, that probably mind get released, because you are not tensed, you are not in a kind of a stressful situation, but rather mind is quite relaxed. Therefore, mind is released. When the mind is released, there is no I making, there is no mind making. No, there is no self.
Yes, understand. Okay, and can I ask a few more queries, because I can't see any more hands raised up. Is that okay?
Fine. There is one hand raised. By the way, I can allow you.
Okay, can I ask a few more queries?
Sure.
Yeah, so the other thing was, for me, I understood, is like looking, going through the two sutras, that the that Buddha really he is pushing for concentration first, and even saying to go up to the level of jhanas and immaterial jhanas and all that. In the commentaries, they do talk about, and what you have explained to us also about vipassana, but I can't see too much of that in the sutta. I mean, it's a translation, obviously, and you may be seeing it better in your, in the Pali version. This is all what we are, teachers are teaching us, and also the commentary. So, in these two particular suttas, he talks more about concentration. Would I be right in saying that?
No, thing is, going through concentration and then switching to emptiness is one approach. And going through vipassana and achieving emptiness is another approach.
Yes.
So therefore, I mean, both are possible. So what we have taken is mostly the second approach, that is developing a fair amount of understanding and using which going to emptiness. And actually when one achieve emptiness, that can immediately, not really immediately, I mean systematically, you can develop to the arupa jhana, that is what we call the imperturbability, and that is also possible, because assume that you first develop vipassana, and using which you are achieving the freedom of mind, and later you are immediately trying to put your mind there. So that is the arupa jhana level. So that is what explained in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So in precise terms, you are reaching emptiness, that can be considered as the upekkha nanatta sita, and later you are quickly trying to switch into that emptiness, and then it is very much like upekkha ekatta sita. So from diversity, equanimity based on diversity, you are converting it to equanimity based on unity. So that equanimity based on unity is nothing but the arupa jhana. So that is what explained in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. We can discuss that also maybe later. And therefore, one can achieve boundless concentration, arupa jhana, after achieving emptiness, after achieving them through vipassana. So therefore, these are different possibilities available. So you don't need to restrict only, okay, Sutta talks about only this part. So only, because the other side is also explained in on another Sutta. Let's take Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta maybe as our next topic. So then you may understand, okay, Buddha explained certain vipassana aspects that slowly leads to the arupa jhana even.
Right, Bhante. Because in these particular two suttas, when I read it, because I have the English translation, it didn't talk much about vipassana, though the commentary said it and you said it. So that was the query. Because it was solely, for my understanding, solely concentration. But that's what I understand what you're trying to say, Bhante. These are last three, you know, Bhante, the three. Emptiness and signless and desirelessness and
appanihita.
They are all actually one dependent on the other, in terms of we can see the impermanence, and from there each one really is based on the impermanence in a different way, because when you see the impermanence, you develop desirelessness. You see impermanence, you see the emptiness, and then if you see the impermanence, you develop the signlessness. So they are all really based on impermanence. Is that right if I said that?
Correct. It is correct. Because like that, Buddha also explained in certain suttas, what you call anicca sanya, anicce dukkha sanya, dukkhe anatta sanya. So likewise, Buddha has explained. Now they are fairly a kind of a gradual process, or a kind of a sequential process, where when one has fair understanding about impermanence, so there's a more possibility that he may understand unsatisfactoriness. And when unsatisfactoriness, impermanence is more available, then may understand the non-self. So likewise, these three characteristics are having some kind of a sequential process also.
Yeah,
As you
correct.
said,
Yeah, you.
impermanence behave as the more foundation.
Yes, because
Yeah.
I used to in my meditation, I used to observe that at some stage you have no control of the processes of going, and I used to put that down as because we have no control. It points to the fact that there is no self, because if we had a self, we would have been able to control things, number one thing.
Correct, correct.
So I used to put my weight on that for non-self. You know, I was able to understand it that way. But looking at this sutta, Buddha is talking more about impermanence. I suppose the other way also you can go along with that, isn't
Yeah,
it?
actually, first of all, we need to have fair understanding about impermanence. Then
Yes.
only you may understand, okay, if the process is so impermanent, so inconstant like this, how can there be a self? Yeah, so then
Well, that
argue
is
like that.
quite once you go along that line, but it's quite self-explanatory. You can see it in everything. You can see, even in real life, in ordinary life, you can see all of that
Correct.
in Bhante.
Correct, definitely. Yes.
Okay, Bhante, thank you so much for your
Okay.
explanation.
Yeah,
Much merit.
okay. You are welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then I think for our last question for the night, I'd like to invite Conti.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. Pante, my name is Sam. I'm using Kanti's laptop.
Right.
So my question is, for my basic understanding, you mentioned that emptiness, avoidance, can be achieved with any of the meditative practices like Anapanasati, Dhyana, Manasikara, mindfulness, etc. But my understanding is that you need deep samadhi in order to get there. And once you get there, I'm assuming that you may not even know that you are there, because you have no thoughts coming to you or leaving you. So that's my basic.
Actually, you don't need thoughts to understanding it, because if you can remember, I mean, I was emphasizing that each and every state, once we achieve it, Buddha used a term, he's fully aware of it. He's fully aware of it. So this is something repeated again and again in this sutta. So he is fully aware of it. Tatta sampajano hoti. So that means he is fully aware of it. So I mean, even though you are not experiencing any thoughts, but you are fully
Yes.
aware of it. So the awareness is available without thoughts. So when you are aware, now suppose you are looking at the moon. So you are fully aware of the
Yes.
moon. Assume that there is no inner chatter. There is no thoughts at all. So can't you say
Yes.
that you are fully aware of the moon? So something like that. So I mean, the point is that we used to think that if we want to fully aware, I should have thoughts. So that is a preconceived idea. I mean, it is not necessary. So the mind, the awareness is available without thoughts. Thoughts are very much like waves of the mind, but for the availability of the awareness, thoughts is not a must.
Is it fair to say, Bhante, that emptiness, avoidance, if you achieve, that it is not for too long, it may be short durations?
Yeah, that is what we explained today. So it is for short durations at the beginning, but now you need to cultivate it. Now you need to expand it. That is what the whole discussion today explaining, that various mechanism to cultivate it. I mean, you had a momentary experience during your sitting meditation, but that is not enough. Now you need to further enhance it even during the sitting meditation. You need to have various external phenomena, how to achieve it, how to develop emptiness. You need to go to walking and see whether you are able to achieve emptiness. You have to maintain emptiness while talking. You have to maintain emptiness while walking, while sitting, while lying down. Say when you are thinking. So I mean, it is different in a way. So it is true at the beginning we may be experiencing it only for a temporary period, but slowly it has to
be maximized so that it becomes the nature of the mind. So mind has its nature as the emptiness. From this empty environment, something is popping up. Yeah.
Can I ask a very short question that we listened to a discussion between Bhikkhu Analayo and Tibetan Rinpoche maybe about 2 or 3 months ago.
Correct.
They were comparing Theravada Buddhism versus the Tibetan Buddhism. And Bhikkhu Analayo clearly said mindfulness without an object is what is required to get to emptiness. Like, I didn't understand that.
Exactly.
What did he mean by without an object?
Yeah, I fully agreed with him because now at the beginning, that I mean, we can analyze the whole discussion today in that angle as well. Now, suppose you are developing mindfulness on feelings, whether on upasana. Now, you have some object in that mindfulness. So, that is the feeling. So, you are now observing how feelings are arising, how feelings are passing away, how feelings are arising, how feelings are passing away. Now, with this, you are gathering momentum using feelings. And now we are gathering momentum for wisdom. And suppose there is enough wisdom is now developed. And at a given moment, now mind relinquished the whole process. Now what it has to grasp? Is he going to grasp feelings? Is it going to grasp forms? Is it going to grasp smells, touching, whatever it is? No, it should not. I mean, if it is grasping, then it is not empty. But it is fully aware. It is fully aware that mind is empty. So therefore, this is a mindfulness without an object. So at first you had mindfulness without an with an object, and you are using it to develop insights. And once insights are available, now mindfulness is there, but without an object.
So it's something that you need to cultivate.
Definitely.
As you go on. Yeah, okay.
Correct, yes.
So basically start with non-clinging.
Based
on the last paragraph you described today, non-clinging to aggregates.
Yeah, actually that is what slowly happens. So actually the non-clinging happens because you have fair understanding about the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature.
Right.
Then when the understanding is developing, so the ability to grasp become less.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Bhante. Okay. Theravan Sarnai. Yeah, Theravan Sarnai. Okay, I think we sharp at 8:30. Then we can wind up the session. So today also, we are able to explain and discuss very good sutta and very insightful sutta. And with that, we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the past relatives, all the celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. And let's wish ourselves also to attain path fruition nibbana. While keeping these good wishes, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.